me feel so doggone blue to listen to that old smokestack. Drivers are rolling on, leaving me here behind. Give me back them good old days and let me ramble down the line. That lonesome train, I love to hear the whistle blow. She's taking the sun and leaving the rain and making me want to go. I've got the blues, longing for her company. Many miles from where I am to the only one for me. It's so lonesome here, waiting for the manifest. I hope that engineer is kind enough to let me be his guest. Pound to me, take me everywhere I want to go, get my transportation free.
Dave Monk, Prairie Monk, WAFT Champagne, 90.1 on your FM dial.
And Dave on the board. This is the Prairie Monk program, WEFT's weekly look at conservation and environmentalism and rails, trails, and greenways. And whatever else Dave has been working on today is Sunday, July the 21st, 2019.
Thank you. We have guests today from next door. They've instituted a gaming shop and... It's very interesting, and we're having them on as guests. And it's Adrian and Christine. And I'll do a few things first, because we've been doing things. First thing, Tom Painter's memorial services at the
That's okay. It's at the Iron Post.
Iron Post. Mm-hmm. And that's 2 to 4, 5. And he's a musician, and they'll probably have some of his contributions. I want to thank Bill Odenweller for running up to Paxton for me and checking out the at CRX, which boiled, and wasn't quite sure what the story was. We found out that it had a burst radiator, and it was at the top, so we could fill it with water and drive a certain distance and then fill it up with water again and got it back to Champaign, and we'll have to replace the radiator. And thank you to Meredith Mohan, who offered to bring me back to Champaign and then decided that she had other things going, but her mother would bring me back, and her mother brought me back, and they're interested in prairie, and then they're also very interested in the preservation of the high school at Paxton, which is a Royal-designed high school and has a national level prominence, and has the elements of being economically feasible. In Iowa, one of these buildings has been converted to apartments, and it's doing very well, and it keeps the facade of a well-known architect. And many of the buildings in Champaign were Royer buildings, including the transportation building at the end of the street. And I want to say thank you to people like Anya, who are working to preserve that building. And it's kind of amazing, the people we meet. There's a somewhat huge move in Paxton to preserve this building rather than have it demolished. We would be interested in a trace between Kankakee and Cairo, which would be a cultural and a natural trace. And that's not quite there yet, not quite the moment, but it has potential. And any attempt to do things may even fail, but that is part of the act of trying to get a community together. And they're very much together. I don't mean to say that it's not. I just find that over and over the rail trail movement has 20,000 miles of railroad bed, and invariably these are bringing communities together to interact with each other, and it invariably leads to economic value. The Kickapoo Trail, which is between Urbana and Danville, has already inspired people to have restaurants and do things that have real economic value, and these places are used. So we have to be doing a lot of teaching fairly quickly, and appreciate Anya and her cohorts that are working at this. We passed the Pope Prairie at Rantoul, just north of Rantoul, and noticed that the gate was open. The Department of Transportation has provided us with a gate which prevents a huge amount of dumping with tandem trucks and the like, dumping it on an old road there. That's been very helpful. We find it open, and I communicated with both Ludlow Township and Rantoul Township. They're putting in a road for the cemetery. The cemetery has bought 6 acres of farmland and have planted it to prairie. So it's almost adjacent to our Pope Prairie. And there's a little patch in between, which is about 6 acres, which we'd like to buy if we could do a kickstart or something like that. So that was rather positive, indirect piece of information. We also communicated with a factory next to the cemetery that in Paxton that is interested, and I keep doing that. And just as the music was playing outside, I met up with a mason who actually puts in bricks and the like from Paxton, and very much aware. So the prairie at the moment is at its July peak. The liatris is almost blooming. There's yellow coneflower and bee balm and black-eyed Susan, and the grasses are growing tall. They're probably 3 foot high now, and they will be 8 or sometimes 10 feet tall in places where there's rich soil. Our Pope Prairie is a borrow pit or gravel pit, so it's smaller and lower because it's sort of simulating growing 10,000 years ago when glaciers moved back. Now, let's transfer to Adrian and Christy, and you have an interesting background, Adrian. You your parents are Sicilian,
yeah.
and you were born in Australia. They migrated to Australia, which is we're very familiar with this. And then you came to the U.S.
Yeah, I came to the U.S. in 1997.
You got to eat your microphone.
Yeah, I came into the U.S. in 1997.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
You got to be close.
I got it. Man. Yep. Yeah, so.
I can only do so much. Go ahead.
Yeah, totally. I came, we migrated to the U.S. in 1997.
Uh-huh.
I think Thanksgiving Day, actually. Hi. Yeah, right?
Chris, you were in Edwardsville.
Yes, my family have always been in Illinois.
Uh-huh. Whereabouts in Illinois? Before Edwardsville.
Before Edwardsville.
I assume you were a student.
My mother's family is from Hoopston, so we have close ties to the farming community here. And then I moved to Champaign for college and never left.
And you're a librarian?
Yes, I'm a librarian at the Champaign Public Library downtown.
Okay, and yes. So you moved into Market Street, which is, in its day, was a kind of orangey street.
Yeah, yeah.
And it has character, and I think the city has wanted to retain some of the character. You've retained the building, yeah, and open it up.
Yeah, yeah. We purchased the building off of Mr. Knight earlier this year, and we've just been sprucing it up a bit on the ground floor to make it nice.
And you've been open?
Yeah, yeah. We opened last Friday, so about 10 days now. Ish.
And it's interesting to see if it has a trade, and you're likely to get more trade than we are, because we're kind of different.
You know, we're on the other side of university. We had been there for 7 years, and we feel that going deeper into downtown will be a better move for us.
You are in the corner.
Yeah, we're actually in the traction station.
Yes.
Yes.
That's a royal building.
Yeah, yeah.
So we wish you very well doing this. And we're neighbors, and the back and forth sometimes is interesting.
Yeah, I like to joke that WEFT is now between two Australians. So, you know, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. I like it.
So tell people who are not into gaming something about gaming. Yeah.
That's a tiny question. That's a very loaded question.
David has something to say.
No.
I was just commenting that could be the rest of the hour right
there.
Yeah,
that's a really big question.
Yes, okay.
Yeah, like...
It's a heavy duty at the moment.
Yeah, well, I mean, gaming has pretty much grown in popularity over the years, you know? I mean, everybody games nowadays. I mean, you've got your core group that game on PCs or game on console like I do. But now you've got my mom, for example, she has more games on her phone than I do. I mean, I feel like everybody games at this day and age, you know, it's convenience. You've got 5 minutes to burn. Let's load it up on a phone and go for it, you know?
So do you do this with the young children and in the library?
I think the middle schoolers and the teenagers are doing the most of the console gaming in the library. We have iPads for younger kids with preloaded games on them that are suitable for their age and development.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So are these all animated? Are they actors, real actors? Are they...
I mean, some games do have real actors in it, and you know, some it's an array of, you know.
But it's virtual reality.
Oh man, VR is a totally different animal, and that's pretty intense as well. Yeah.
So, do you write?
No, I'm really bad with words and paper and read. Everything.
Do you write as a library?
No, I read.
Okay. So I'm watching, and it seems like, as with WEFT, CDs are almost obsolete. Are you likely to lose out to the internet?
Well, you know, it's... Short answer is yeah. You know, everybody, especially kids these days, they want to download it. You know, everything's download. Why wait in line and pick up a physical copy when I can download it instantly the moment it comes out? You know, but then you have people who want physical. You know, you've got people who are still collecting records. You know, you've got people who are still collecting cartridges or new CDs or DVDs, Blu-rays, whatever, games. You've got a small section of the market, or a growing section of the market, that just wants download only, but it's not gonna get rid of us, you know. It's just it taps
into it. Yes,
some people
who are collecting, and they don't necessarily want to change. They, and some of the internet games change fairly quickly.
Mm.
So, do you have to be a mathematician to run these games?
Oh no! I mean,
it seems to me that there's a lot of opportunity to do things and to have algorithms that go off in a different direction, and you get charged for the algorithms. And
you know, it's the games we play have already. They're already come to completion. You know, I just sit down and enjoy the eye candy as it happens. You know, it's, I just get to play them. You know, developing the games is a whole different animal that I wouldn't even know where to begin with. You know, I just sell you games, you know. But playing a game is, you sit down and just go wild, do what you can in the game and go from there. It's pretty basic. I should bring you some one day.
So, how do women fit into this? Where do you fit in? It seems to me, I look at comics, and some of them have been very strong on symbology of women, but whether the women are really a major part of the comic is questionable. Is that changing?
Yeah, so it used to be a predominantly male industry, or, you know, guys gamed, but there is growing... It's growing. It's no longer just, you know, females game. You know, we are having games that have strong female leads in games now, you know, where it's no longer just a male-centric thing. You know, there are pro-female gamers now. It's just not catered to one, you know.
Okay. Does that find its way into the library? Is that... changing with the small number of gaming opportunities you have? Do you sense that?
I think games, video games, are a very diverse field and becoming more diverse. And it lets people be whoever they want to be, try out different characters, explore different scenarios, be very creative. So it's a format that is... very flexible.
Yeah, I like the word diverse. Yeah, that's a really cool word.
Do you find a lot of the girls come in and use your equipment, or is it, again, as you were saying, kind of a boy-centric thing at the library?
Hmm.
Oh,
shrug.
We don't know. Okay.
We just shrug it.
The shoppers that I have seen are diverse.
Yeah, we get a really mixed bag of people, and it's great, because I get to see people in all aspects of life. You know, we've got little kids, you know, like 7, 8-year-olds that are just getting into it. We have, I mean, one thing that really stands in my mind is, if we had this guy, he had to be about 70, coming in looking for a Game Boy and Tetris for his wife, because that's all she played. And she had been playing the game for years, and her system and game broke, so he went out and bought another one, you know. I don't have, this is my clientele between this and this. I've got, you know, if you want a game, you know, do it. You know, there's no age requirement here, you know. Well, okay. It kind of is, but yeah.
Do older people get into this? It seems like we are talking about mothers and grandfathers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm old enough to be a parent at this point in time, so mm-hmm. You know, even if I did have a kid, I would still be gaming, you know. I have a buddy of mine who has two kids, and they both game, and he games with them, and it's kind of like a family thing, you know. He'll pick out games, like the Lego games are really good. The dad or the mom and the parents and the kids can play together.
I've watched a family with Lego, and the children have been with each other and actually teaching each other, and it's popular. What about Pokemon? I see them all around the park. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm a little ignorant of what it is, but I run into people all the time.
Pokemon Go, yeah, it's an augmented reality, or it can be an augmented reality game. You just go around, and a Pokemon will pop up, and you can catch it if you want. You can also battle other people or other gems that pop up. I know I think the Blind Pig maybe is a gym. So, you know, yeah, but it's all virtual, you know, you just walk around. And it's really good because it's gotten people out of the house while gaming instead of just like sitting in your basement or sitting in your room and just not talking to, you know, not doing anything. So it's
a communication.
Yeah, it gets people out. And, you know, I'm all for gaming, but I'm also all for going outside and
so does the game that goes outside has to be simpler because it doesn't have a retina of machinery that you can work with?
Phones these days are super, you know, super powerful compared to what they used to be, you know. So it's...
That's another question.
Yeah, it's like you're carrying around a really awesome computer in your pocket these days. Everybody is, you know, so... Hardware-wise, phones can
so
do
that
it.
That allows some actual exercise because some of the people that are addicted to this are sitting in a room without exercise for a lot of time.
I mean, yeah. I mean, games don't really... You've got certain games like Dance Dance Revolution where it's very physical. You know, you're dancing on a mat, you're jumping up and down. But you've got other games like... You know, you've got your Call of Duties or your Borderlands, where you just sit down and you just run a seat and you're watching a screen, you know?
So you're activating your brain, but not your muscles.
Right. You know, so it all depends on what kind of way you want to go with this, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm one of the people who like to vegetate on a couch and just, you know, play a game, but, you know, each to his own, you know?
So you can interact in most of these things with international people, so there's a communication that is pretty interesting.
Yeah, I mean, you can. A lot of times you can group up with your friends and, you know, have a good time with your friends. You can also group with rando people, just randoms. And sometimes you just get insulted by 13-year-olds because that's what you do, you know? And it comes with the territory, I think.
So being an environmentalist... What sort of programs do you have that sort of emphasize environmental issues?
Oh, man.
You know, one of the good things about your store is that you can make specific game recommendations to people.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't know the answer, despite his vast experience, he will look it up and show you online what the game looks like so you can tell if it would be a good fit for you.
Okay.
Yeah. Environment, though, I don't know. I mean, there's a Captain Planet game, I guess, so that would work, you know.
Animal Crossing, you go around and you pull all the weeds,
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, Harvest Moon.
Love Animal Crossing, still play to this day.
I do, I can't stand Animal Crossing because it's like, be here at 4 o'clock on Friday. I'm like, I've got work to do, people, you know.
But that's where you change the clock time, you see, on your console.
What was that collaborative game that you couldn't, you had to do it with a partner, but you couldn't speak
Journey.
To them?
Journey on the PS3, mm-hmm. I guess. I mean, that you get teamed up with a random person, you can't speak to them, and you do this game via gestures, you know, in the game, and it gives it a very, what's that, a very intimate feel on the game, you know?
Is it?
Very interesting, but I guess you could play Harvest Moon as well. I mean, you build a farm, gotta milk some cows, grow some corn, you know, find a date.
Endless Ocean.
Yeah. I'm not sure if people know where milk comes from and that there is a cow. They pick up their milk from the supermarket without having to think about a friendly cow that you have to milk. So around the corner you have 100 people writing games.
Yeah.
Volition,
yeah.
So... Who writes the games? I get the impression that the people who write the games are often addicted to this and interested in it and inspired by it, but they don't get paid for it.
I mean, no, you've got, I mean, Volition, I mean, you've got, I think there's 130, 150 people at Volition. And yeah, it's their job to make a game. I know they're currently in development of a game. You know, so you've got your writers, you have your
artists,
you know, you've got your team of people doing what they're doing, and they're all getting paid for it, and whatnot. And they enjoy the game. You know, they enjoy doing what they do. You know,
it's yes, that's a very positive way of having a job.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, I've gone in there. It seems like a very, well, when I went, it was a very low key, you know, environment. But I could assume once they get closer to deadline, it's not as relaxed in there, you know.
Well, yes, some people live on deadlines.
Yeah,
they really enjoy them. Other people are put down by deadlines. They're going to procrastinate for a long time. But there's a dreaming in there. And can you detect a young gamer that comes into your shop?
I mean, there's certain people that come in. Sometimes, like, somebody will come in and they will do nothing but breathe in. They're like, and it's like, breathe out, kid. You're good. You're good. You know, like, they would run around and they would, like, put their hands on the cases. Like, these are so cool. You know, so, and then you've got like, people my age, and they bring in their wife, and you can tell the wife's like, can we go now, you know? So it, you know, it's
so what goes on in the sound world? Do you have music? Is this oriented to military things? Do you have lots of banging and noise? That is this a competitive thing? Is this inspiring people to be more militaristic?
No. I mean, the whole same where games increase violence. What is it? Mm-hmm. Games make people violent. That's, I mean, I've been gaming since I was like five. You know, I'm not going around, you know, stabbing people. You know, it's just, there are games for every walk of life. Yeah, you have your extremely violent games, but then you have rhythm-based games where it will play music and you either strum a guitar or you play, you know, play drums to go with it. You get to pick and choose what kind of games you want to play, you know? But just because I play a violent game doesn't mean I'm enjoying the violence. It's just that's what I like to do, you know, but I won't enjoy going and actually hurting
punching
somebody.
Anyone.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, so it's the games are what they're meant to be. It's no different than watching a violent movie or reading a violent book. It's just different forms of stimulation, you know?
Yes, I understand that. Do you have tutorials that teach people how to do this?
The most newer games do come with a form of tutorial to teach, you know, teach you how to play a game. If somebody's like, I don't know how to do this, I will give them pro tips. You know, I'll give them tips on how to do stuff. Mm-hmm. But the learning curve of a game is, to me, the enjoyable part, you know. I can tell you how to do something, but it's up to you to actually get good
it's
enough
the process
to do it. Yeah.
Doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And like the process of saving a building, the process is interesting because you're working with people on either side and they have to realize that this is a building that's of national note. So, yes, it's a learning process. So even if you lose that building, then the next time something comes around like that, there's been some learning.
Right. You know, so, you know, people, if they stick to it, will progressively get better at what they do to a point. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty easy to get into it at this point, you know, even if you've never done it before, just pick up a controller and go at it. It's.
There are books.
Books will tell you how to do it, too. You got to have those books, right?
Yes. Okay. David, do you have any comments?
When
you have
physical
gaming.
Yes, I'm a console sort of person. When you mentioned the kids coming in saying, oh my gosh, look at that. Libraries have to be the exact same way. Some kids got their collection of books at home. Then they walk into the Champagne Library. So the same wonderment and gosh. But I can take these home with me, but you have to bring them back. Oh, well, okay. So there's a connection there. My other thought was, just because you will play something violent doesn't mean you'll be violent. Just because you're good at playing Guitar Hero doesn't mean you'll be able to good at playing a guitar.
Right, I found that out.
It's really hard. But the big picture question, how many different consoles do you have games for? What don't you have a game for?
Oh, man. Like, there is... I personally had, at one time, I had about 40 different consoles.
Wow.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's really easy to do because I just... I want this game. I'll just take it home. And it got out of control for a while. But in the store-wise, we have everything ranging from the early 80s all the way to current gen. And honestly, whatever I can get my hands on, you know?
Do you go back to the old Atari, like, Pong sort of era, practically?
I
or do, E.T., like, you know?
Like, I grew up with an Atari Junior. And I like to go back every now and then. But after about 10 minutes, they're like, okay, we're good at this. We'll go to something that has a bit more substance.
Right, not much eye candy back there, right?
Right. Well,
for a beginner like me, those games were good.
There's one button, you know. We did play some Lunar Landing yesterday just for the 50th anniversary.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, yeah, so I landed a few spaceships, you know, for the homage, I guess.
So do you have gaming facilities at your shop?
I don't. We used to host tournaments, but I just got too busy with other stuff, so I kind of put that on hold. There's a lot of groups in town that set up weekly. Like, I know GMART every Saturday has a weekly fighting tournament, you know, for, like, fighting games.
You got the two kiosks.
I do have two kiosks that I've... One's got a Xbox 360 and one's got a PlayStation on it. And you can come and play that for a while, you know, but to come in and just sit down and game, I don't have anything like that set up right now.
So you have CDs, but you have tiny little CDs.
Yes, yes.
I didn't quite understand that. Do you have to, can that fit in something like a cell phone?
Everything
is... a chip.
Everything is made for a specific system, you know?
Oh.
So that will fit into whatever system it's made for.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they have an interesting shop with, it was, the bricks are still showing. So
yes.
You're part of downtown Market Street in that sense. I don't think you have any beer sign or on the wall.
No, we were actually, I was kind of disappointed when we removed the stucco from stucco so we could see the brick. I was hoping to find something really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, I believe the upstairs used to be a hand-painted sign place from what we could find out. So I was hoping that somebody would, you know, have doodled something on the walls or whatnot and nothing. The only thing that we found that was really interesting is we got a counter on the wall. I think it says 13, 15.
Some hash marks, tally marks are on the wall.
Yeah, and there's a pi symbol, so I like to say the hash marks, the amount of pies somebody has eaten. And then we had somebody write Aussie on the very top of one of the bricks, like right by the ceiling. But that's about it, you know.
Some of the bricks are handmade, and you can even see where the fingers were into the clay. So this area has actually been frame buildings for quite some time, and that was very dangerous because when you get to winter and the wood dries out, it's very and you have heat, it's likely to burn. And so this whole block has burned at one stage.
Oh.
And so these are relatively new buildings. They're all about 100 feet long and about 25 feet wide. I think it might be 30. But it was in the era before you had an I-beam. So some of these buildings do have I-beams, which made them possible to have a wider building.
Mm.
Some buildings on the other side of Taylor Street, we think, still have wooden beams, which couldn't be so wide.
Interesting.
And so some of the history is still there, and a lot of it would be starting price betting, and you would have details on the walls, and especially upstairs.
Yeah, we've tried to find out as much as we can about specifically our building, but this street in general, you know, since we're here, might as well learn a bit of the history.
Yes.
You know.
So, did you learn about the building that you were in before? Did you know it was a royal building?
I didn't know it was a royal building. I knew it was the traction station.
Yes, that's where
it's the traction station. I knew it was a power company as well for a while. But besides that, who? The Onion. Was it The Onion that had a local... I spoke to your friend about it.
Yeah, it was something similar to
similar
the Onion.
To The Onion. There
local
was
local similar paper.
Paper that was ran out of the building in one of the back rooms. So, yeah, I didn't go deep into that building because I was just renting, you know. I honestly didn't think I'd be there for as long as I was.
It had a lot of connotations for the Paxton that I'm working with at the moment. Because they had a moraine that was the tallest little mountain between Cairo and Chicago, and you had to have a steam engine waiting at to push the freight trains over the hill. So they borrowed this out, so there's now you can stand on top at the moraine level and be underneath the trains going through. And so some of that dirt, all that glacial till, came down to make the underpasses that we have now, because people were getting very upset. They had something like 25 freight trains, passenger trains, let alone freight trains. And in the 1920s, they were getting to be very frustrated. Even today, we're getting frustrated because you have 200 long trains. And if they slow down in the process because Bradley Avenue is...
Oh, man, I was just talking about this. Yeah.
So you're having the same sort of thing. So these days they're putting an engine in the middle of the train and an engine on the end. Hmm. And but that interrelationship of Paxton to Champaign and taking the railroad line from almost where you're sitting... across east and raising the whole railroad line up was a historic event.
Hmm.
And, but they also had theaters, and the Virginia Theater has been preserved. And so little pieces around town, when you have a huge number of people at a lot of bars, what do you give them to do, and what is their interest in, and how can you stimulate that sort of interaction? So you're part of it, and so your knowledge of the buildings is helpful.
Yeah, like I said, my knowledge is very limited right now because we just started diving into it.
Yes.
We just bought it, but it is something that we're getting into, you know. Just slowly.
I see you have a little sign outside, which is different from downtown.
Yeah.
So, but that happens in other places, and it's part of the act of doing business on Market Street.
Yeah, we're getting used to the new location. We haven't moved in 100% yet. I was at the other location for 7 years, so there's 7 years worth of junk. No easy way to put it, you know, that we have to move.
So you're living there too?
Yeah, there was a really nice apartment above the storefront, so you know, it's got its pros and cons living downtown, you know. Gets kind of rowdy at night sometimes. You know.
Yes. Well, when there was a bar right next door,
yes,
that could be very loud, especially depending on the type of music.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice if it's music that we enjoy. We just open a window and we just let the music, you know,
come in.
I mean, even closing the windows, the music's gonna come in anyway. But you know, it's nice. You know, it like I said, it's got its pros and cons. I mean. It does get kind of rowdy. Like, we'll be laying in bed and we can hear people's conversations because, you know, why not? You know, it is what it is.
And you have some vegetation next door to you.
Yes.
And that's a question because the vegetation can often have Horstoria that go into the tuck pointing.
Yes.
And so it's an insurance problem.
I mean, not going to lie, we're probably going to get rid of, like, I like it, but as you mentioned, it does eat at the tuck pointing, and we are trying to preserve our building, you know. Our
so building. We'll have to clear the vines every few years.
Yeah, you know.
Well, in fall, it's absolutely wonderful for the people that are there. They love it. So how do you balance one against the other?
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. That is on one of the bottom things on our to-do list to do with this building right now, just because we're still in the process of making the store feel like what it needs to feel like. And once that's all set up, we're going to look at better signage outside and what are we going to do with the bricks outside. Are we going to keep the vines growing, or we're going to keep them under, you know, or we're just going to take them down every few years?
You may be able to rent the site so that the damage can be repaired.
Yeah.
If they want the image.
Right, yeah. Right, exactly. You know, if Seven Saints likes it a lot, you know, I don't mind if we work out a deal with them that we keep it, but, you know, we'll see.
So is there a dress code with your trade?
Yeah, jeans and T-shirts. ripped jeans and T-shirts today. But generally, no. I mean, it's...
Well, you have a comic ship shop just up the street.
Yes.
And so every once in a while they have a sale, and people will arrive in costume.
Yes, they did that for a free comic book day, where people dressed up. I know on the same day, I believe Paul Brothers also did something to do with Star Wars, because it landed on Star Wars Day.
Yes, there's cooperative
things. Yeah, here. So people were dressed up. I don't think I have had really many people dress up come into the... I had somebody roll up in a fursuit once, like as a cat, and that was... That's where I drew the line. I'm like, you got to at least take off your head, please. You know? But no, as dress code, I've had people come in suits and whatnot, you know? And I'm like, man, that's really, really fancy. I sometimes wear a T-shirt that has a tuxedo drawn on it in case I want to feel like I'm dressing up for work. But generally, it's just T-shirt and jeans.
Anyone who watches this on TV will note that his jeans demonstrate exactly what he's talking about.
So how much time do we have?
Yeah, 15 minutes.
Wow. Do you go to conferences? There seems to be some outstanding conferences around.
Yeah, I've gone to a few. I went to we're actually going one in 2 weeks. We're going to the Missouri Game Con as a vendor. So we're going to bring our wares, I guess, and see how much we can sell. You know, I've gone as just a normal person to some of them, you know, just to check it out, just to have a mini vacation still in the industry. I've gone to, what's E3 considered? I don't know, but I've gone to E3 as a buyer to check out, you know, upcoming games, new products, stuff like that. But generally, since it's a one-man show, if I do leave the store, unfortunately, I have to bribe a friend to keep it running, or we shut it down, you know?
Yes, I have the same problem. If we're out in the field.
Yeah.
Christy, can you step in and take over? I mean, do you know if, are you comfortable enough about
it? Absolutely not.
Oh, no, because you're the obvious choice.
We have very different backgrounds and strengths.
Yeah.
So yeah. Opposites often are very interesting.
Yeah, it's really nice because she knows the alphabet really well, and she can make sure my store is alphabetized really nicely.
So you have a Dewey Decimal?
No, but she can still self-check, self-reading.
I haven't classified the games quite to that degree yet.
Okay.
Just alphabetical.
It's interesting. Thinking of a little plant when you're thinking about interacting with others, there's a rosin weed plant right against the what used to be a pocket prairie, and I almost want to name it Defiance, despite the fact that it's been left, and it's growing in what you would think was asphalt, and it's flowering at the present time.
Nice.
So I might take a photograph of it and put it when we go video. We take this program and make it a video program by dropping pictures in.
Nice, yeah.
And if you have any pictures that you might find interesting on this topic, if you have a thumb drive, we would drop in a picture or two that is helpful. Even so, a picture of yourselves as a...
I took a lot of photos of before and during the renovations we did on the building, and it's a night and day difference between what it was, because I think the building was, the floor level was vacant for at least 10 years, it seems, before we...
Well, they were using it to store brewery.
Malt, yeah, right, malt and hops, yeah, because the person you bought it from owns the Blaine Pig
Chris Knight.
In town
and,
here, so...
And you have a pipe that runs through Underweft and through areas to the Blind Pig.
There is a lot of pipes in that in the basement. I mean, we've got the water main for your
sprinkler system
in our basement. So we've got this big hunking water main. It's got 8-inch pipes, and it's just really scary looking. Like, I'm not gonna lie, there's pipes everywhere down there.
So if you go into the basement of your, there's an alleyway that you can go through onto Walnut Street.
I believe it's Crudo's. It goes to Crudo's. It's cinder blocked up, but yeah, there you can tell there's, in fact, there's two doors up on the main floor that lead to Walnut, and one leads to you guys.
Huh. There were eight buildings, but in 1956, the Grubb family that was operating, I think in Hoopston or in Decatur, they decided to come to Champaign, and gradually they occupied eight buildings, including the one that you're in, the one that we're in, and the West building, were all Grub and Gravy. And it was a time when you set your type with a linotype, click, 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 and it made a lead image. And then you had to set that up, so you had a pair journeyman to set this up in, and then you poured lead, so you had a lead copy of it, and then you could make a fiber optics, not a fiber optics, paper mache copy of that, and you could send that to other places where they would produce a newspaper, and they could pour their own lead into that.
Okay.
So at one stage you could walk up Mazur Street and there was a linotype in the window.
Interesting.
And it changed, it went to rotogravure. But then you needed a new form of offset press where you had an image that was made on, sometimes on copper, was a letterpress thing, but mostly on a flexible piece of aluminum that was photosensitive, and then that sort of became computerized, and the trade dropped out, and this whole newspaper business has changed and lost out to the internet. So in just a few years, we've had tremendous changes here, and who knows what will happen in the next 20 years, and you're a part of it.
I mean, talking about the newspaper, I mean, you had the News Gazette building that was recently bought, 2 years ago by Janet? So, you know, I mean, that...
Confusing.
That in itself, I mean, News Gazette got rid of one of their... What was it? It was a printing facility?
Yes,
it was
a press.
Yeah, it was a press. So, I mean, everything's changing, so you just got to kind of keep up with...
And the press was not that obsolete. It was functional, but obsolete. And a lot of the equipment that we have, enlargers, for instance, you would pay $1,000 for a bezel enlarger, and it's quite functional now, but totally obsolete. So we sometimes have to wonder what we do. What do you do with all the telephones that have been superseded by fiber optics and the like?
Like old school tube televisions. Mm-hmm. Like, what do you, nobody takes those anymore.
Yes, well, the people who innovate don't innovate for the recycling of everything. So it costs a lot to recycle what we would have had downtown.
Yeah.
And the heating, when you had an alleyway behind these buildings, you had some stores like Grubbs had a spider, they called it. It was a huge heating plant, and they piped heat all these buildings. Then it was decided to close the alleyway, and the different people got 20 feet to one side, 20 feet to the other side. And then people had to put in their own heater. So you had a heater in your basement, but now I think you have a heat exchanger on the roof.
Yeah, yeah. I don't think I have my actual heater. I've got the furnace in the basement, AC unit on the roof. Three AC units on the roof, actually. Mm. Yeah, yeah, somebody's borrowing our space for a while. Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yes. You also had basements, and sometimes the basements were not tall enough to, so as you walked, you could bump into an electric light.
Yeah, I'm 6 foot, and I have to duck in our basement at times, because it's just, yeah, it's not good for tall people.
And then you had an alleyway where, before there was even heat from Grubbs or Walnut Street, you had a professional heating plant up on North Neal, and it provided heat in these channels. So part of our front is where the heat would come in for them, that sort of facility. When they took it out, sometimes there was a door that you could get into your basement. And it must be a bugaboo to you, because it costs $1,000 to put that, to replace what was, when they widened the street, what used to be there was obsolete. So now it's aluminum, but it makes this noise. I try to walk around it. I see people walking around it.
We have a trap door that that leads into the basement, and we don't know how to open it just yet.
Oh, so it opens from underneath.
We tried. It doesn't budge. It just doesn't budge. So it's really interesting, because sometimes I'm down there and people would walk past and they would start jumping on it.
Oh, children do it.
And it resonates really well downstairs. So I like to get my broom and just hit it back, you know, just to hear what kind of reactions they're going to get out of it, you know. But yeah, it's interesting. One day I'm going to open it just to, because we've got some big stuff that we just want to slide into the basement.
Yes, if you have a 10-foot pole, it's handy to do that rather than to try and get down the stairwell. It wouldn't go.
Yeah.
Just you back up to Walnut Street, and so people can play baseball on your roof. Have you had that problem yet? No.
We've gone on our roof. It's kind of sketchy on our roof, because there is no. You can just keep them walking and fall off. There is no like barrier. Oh, you know, it's super awesome up there. The view is great, though. The view is amazing. But yeah, nobody. It looks like.
And we were not tempted to play any sports.
No. I mean, I'm not a sports person, but I wouldn't try to take my my eyes off the where I'm walking.
Well,
you know,
there's some three-story buildings on the other side, and people come out the window, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, when they have been drinking, that you can have an interesting event there.
Would you normally be open right now?
I will be open in like 5 minutes.
Okay, because I've already seen one patron walk up and then walk away from your door.
Yeah,
so
no,
I think
no, that's our toy guy. I'm keeping an eye on him.
Retro toys and video games.
And video games, yeah.
We should make sure to get in your hours. Are you open every day of the week?
We're open 7 days a week, officially the hours are noon to 8, but like if there's an event going on or if Paul Brothers or Seven Saints is doing something, we're just going to stay open. Because, I mean, honestly, I live upstairs. It's not like I need to go home. I am home, you know, so I stay open, play a game. If people walk in, yeah, let's do it. If not, I haven't wasted any additional time, really.
We enjoy being part of the community in this new location.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
Good.
It'll evolve over the years.
Yeah.
3 minutes.
So, yeah. Well, let's... Is there anything else you might say about your background? I was interested because I've met just recently several people from that have a connection with Sicily. I have come here as you have, and you get to know one person I'm talking about. Has a Sicilian and a Peruvian background, and they came here as engineers and got into the building trade. But going back, that person is married to a Sicilian, and one of our WEFT people here has just been to Sicily because they were in the army. And located in Sicily, but they never did really see all of Sicily, and they were absolutely amazed and pleased to be there. And have you been back there?
I've never gone. I've got family that still lives there, like I guess uncles and whatnot, I guess. So the plan eventually one day is to, you know, go see where my lineage lies. But right now, every time I go to take a vacation, I end up always back home to Australia. You know, that's for me is my home, you know?
And that's interesting, too, because when Australia had a white Australia policy till perhaps 1964, there was this line that was put around the Bosphorus and down. So if you were very dark Sicilian, you could get into Australia, but if you are a very light Persian from the Middle East, you wouldn't be able to get in. And so I had a friend who got a postdoc in New Zealand, which had the same policy, and he lost his postdoc, and 3 years later he found out that he had been on the wrong side of the Bosphorus. He's born on the wrong side of the Bosphorus. So he could say in very strong Turkish, those goddamn twin-speaking Englishmen. it's interesting to have this background. Do you have a European background?
We're out of time.
Okay, sorry about that. So this is Dave Monk, your Prairie Monk, and we've got the Adrian and Kristen that are opening a store or have opened a store next door to WEFT, and we wish them all the best in whatever they do and getting to know the community. And thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks for